Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
to speak about prestige. You may attend various seminars given by non-devotees on how to increase your prestige, how to stand out as an important person. This is against the principle of bhakti. Trunadapi sunichena tarori vasahishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has famously recommended that devotees of Krishna should cultivate the consciousness of thinking themselves as very small, less significant than a piece of grass, and should be more tolerant than a tree. Should offer respect to others and not desire respect for themselves, and always chant the names of Krishna, which is just the opposite to the consciousness of a materialistic person who is very concerned with prestige. Especially there's a certain class of person who are openly concerned or shamelessly concerned with prestige. Yesterday we were in the shopping mall. I think the shopping mall was just designed for people who are interested in prestige mostly. Because all the items on sale are just for increasing people's so-called prestige. We were trying to find a cheap watch. We've got that just, you know, you just want a watch to tell the time, but mostly they're with all kinds of jewels and fancy things to, so that people can know that it's not just for telling the time, but so that people can know that you're wearing something which costs more money than other people can afford to spend on a watch. And like that, designer sunglasses, designer, what else they have? Shoes?
Cars,
yeah. $30,000, $40,000. If you buy a $40,000 car, you take it away, and the minute you drive it, the minute you purchased it, its value goes down. Right? As soon as it's bought, it's a second-hand car, used car. In this way, people are cheated. But they like it. A certain class of person, and then all kinds of clothes and cosmetics, and it's all just for increasing prestige. Buildings, where you live, which part of town you live in, how big your apartment is. Some people spend money ostentatiously just to show off how much money they have. Just throw it around. People want to get a big position. In India, the idea is that one should be a success. This is very prominent, in, especially among young people, the idea, I should be a success, which means you should earn a lot of money. That's what it means. You should not be just some ordinary person driving a truck, but you should be working for some big company, international company that's considered in a high post, earning lots of money. So the idea to be a success, to have a pretty wife, that's also can dress her up. Sri Aishwarya Prajapsavam, that's mentioned in Bhagavatam, that materialistic people, they like to show off their pretty women, their opulence and money, and then all their family members. I'm running a big institution, and my family, and all these pretty women I have around me, that's also prestigious. Pretty women with big earrings and like that. Miss Universe contest is coming up in Zagreb, is it? I noticed some reclama. Is it? I just saw Miss Universe. I didn't bother. It's coming up in Zagreb. So we're already finished. Every year in Zagreb. Local Miss Universe. Oh, I see. It's like Miss Croatia, and then they send her on to Miss Universe. Miss Universe. They think there's no more pretty women in the heavenly planet. The only pretty women are on the beaches in Croatia. So, anyway, they think this little miserable planet is the whole universe. And there's only like lizard-like beings on other planets, ETs. I guess the pigs also, they could have a Miss World contest also. Among the pigs.
Miss Piggy.
Miss Pig. Look at that nose. And look at those legs. They're rich. Really beautiful.
With makeup.
Yeah. You could maybe start a whole new line there. Get a big business. Could become prestigious. They have competitions for dogs and cats, right? That's another prestigious thing. You can buy a racehorse for like €1 million, right? More. Right? One horse. And then when it's a few years old, they just kill it because it can't run fast anymore. That's another thing. For rich people, it's like they buy racehorses. And works of art, someone paints a painting and they're... Yeah, this always goes down. They paint paintings, and then if someone's known as a prestigious artist, then their painting can sell for millions of dollars. A few years ago I saw in a newspaper in Britain there was a famous artist, modern art. So one of his paintings sold for a lot of money. Then afterwards he said, actually, I just left all my paintings out with a canvas and my four-year-old kid was just playing around. When he finished, I signed my name on it and it sold for a few £100,000 or something. People must have been looking and saying, yeah, so I can see this expressing this. Or that. It's just a kid playing. Prestige. One has to show oneself to be a very important person. Of course, many people, they're not interested in that. They're just like ordinary people. They don't bother. They make a point of being ordinary or being resisting this prestige society. But then among themselves, they also get different kind of prestige, just like the hippies in the 1960s. They dropped out of society, but then they had their prestige symbols. Among the men, who's got the longest hair? That became a prestige symbol. And then how many times you'd had an acid trip? That became, I don't know, you all probably came a little later than me, but if you got past 100, that was like pretty good. And then there are people, a few hundred, and, they count them one by one as a prestige symbol, how much you burn your brain out with different... Well, mostly LSD was most popular. So they developed among themselves various prestige symbols, and then if you happened to be a big music star or you knew someone, so that... concept of prestige was there, but a sadhu, especially a devotee of Krishna, is not interested in that, because an obstacle on the path of devotion to Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is mentioned among the obstacles to attaining pure love of Krishna, nishyadacha kutinati jive hinja. Lab, puja, pratishta, jato, upashakara. In the description of the bhakti lata, the creeper that grows up and up and up, and eventually pierces through the universe, reaches to the lotus feet of Krishna, and there gives the fruit of love of Krishna, so that growing plant of bhakti, while still in this world, its growth can be arrested by various weeds, among which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lists as prominent forbidden behavior, nishijacha, kutinati, this duplicitous behavior, politics, jive hinsha, not preaching Krishna consciousness. Then the desire for gain, monetary gain, properties, all this kind of thing. And the desire to be respected, and the desire to attain some position, to be. So these puja, pratishta, they're very similar. To have some position, and money usually goes with that also. So these are all obstacles, blockages on the path of pure devotion. So a devotee avoids that, and actually sees it as quite stupid, just like we were discussing now. I think we, everyone who's here, it's quite obvious to them that the pursuit of prestige, gross prestige, wearing fancy clothes just for the sake of prestige and showing off a fancy car, I think for everyone here, it's quite obviously stupid. But a devotee, I mean, even there are many people in society, they're just not bothered with this. They're just not much bothered with this gross show of prestige. Still, people like to maintain some respect in human society. But a devotee, he sees with the eye of knowledge, a philosophical eye, and understands how small I am, how small are we, how important are we, that if we consider this vast universe is only one. Well, actually, I think Sadaputta Prabhu, he coined that term multiverse, because universe means there's only one. But then we speak of multiple universes. So we're in one of the multiverses. There are so many coming out of the body of Mahavishnu. So this is just one universe in so many. It's actually the smallest. And was that you yesterday saying to me that the, or maybe a couple of days ago, that the scientists, whenever they try to estimate the size of the universe, it's always getting bigger. Anyway, just like when they try to estimate the beginning of the universe, the date always goes back, and then the first man, it always goes back. What is it now, the latest? The first man appeared on, it's always going back in time. 300,000 years now. And the first civilized man was, must have been an Englishman. Must have spoken English, right? So that was about less than 2,000 years ago. So like that. This time is vast. Space is vast. We are very, very, we're so small, we can hardly imagine how small we are, if we think about it philosophically. Very, very small, very, very tiny. But we take ourselves very seriously. We take everything around ourselves very seriously. But a devotee sees with the eye of knowledge and realizes that I'm very small. Haridas Thakur, when he was about to depart this world, he said, well, what does it matter? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not pleased that Haridas Thakur was about to leave, because he loved Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, loved Haridas. Haridas said, what does it matter if an ant leaves this world? Who laments? You won't see in the newspaper that a cyclist runs over an ant. Kill the ant. It's not a newspaper, right? It's not even anything that anyone would even think of. Just don't take it very seriously at all. So Haridas Thakur said, what does it matter if an ant departs this world? So he was thinking of himself like an ant, which is actually correct in terms of philosophical understanding. What does it matter? Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what does it matter even if the whole universe just vanishes? If everyone in the universe, just departs this world and goes back to Godhead, what does it matter? It's just like if you're carrying a bag of mustard seeds. You know how small it is? You have a similar seed here? Very, very small seed.
Poppy seeds.
About the same size, yeah. So if you have a bag of big sack of poppy seeds and one falls out, you don't stop even to bother to pick it up. It's insignificant. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what does it matter even if a whole universe just ceases to exist? What does it matter? So what does it matter if one person passes away from this world? It's just not very insignificant. Of course, it was significant because Haridas Thakur was a great devotee of Krishna. But philosophically speaking, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make that much difference. People, all kinds of living entities, or to be more correct, jivas in all kinds of forms, 8,400,000 forms, are always coming and going. So what does it matter if one comes, one goes? We're very, 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 very tiny. So a devotee cultivates that understanding and cultivates the understanding how very, 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 very great is Krishna and how very kind is Krishna to take an interest in us at all. There being so much disparity between Krishna's position and our position. That's Krishna's kindness. He takes us seriously. Devotees are actually the only people in the world who have any real importance. Everyone's important, but devotees are important because Krishna likes them. Krishna sees them. He appreciates jivas who are acting in their constitutional position of service to Krishna. But otherwise, how big are we? How great are we? How many big important people have ruled over Croatia? This must have been under Turkish rule, I guess, for a long time. And then after some time under Austrian rule. So this must have been ruled from Constantinople at that time, I guess, was it? Mm-hmm. So, I guess everyone in this area, they would have known the name of the ruler, or at least the educated people, maybe not the peasants, as they were called in those days. But they would have known the name of the ruler who was ruling from a long way away in Constantinople, a very important person, if anyone said, oh, it's his order, oh, take it very seriously. But now, can anyone say any of the names of any of the rulers from Constantinople who ruled over here? They're just forgotten in Constantinople. Just forgotten. Big, big man, and then they become nothing. Just, or they become a dog or a cat. Or like that. That's the way it goes. Today's king, tomorrow's cat or dog. What's that? Kutra. What's that? Dog? Kutra?
Kukra.
Kukra. Oh. Alright, okay. That's what it was. Alright. Kukur is one Sanskrit word for dog, so that's it. Kutta is Hindi. Anyway. So, big man today, small man tomorrow. Some germ, worm in stool. They also have their prestige. Who's the biggest worm in stool in this flock of stool? The most powerful worm in stool. Never seen such a powerful worm in stool worm as this one. Maybe not, and the lower species of life. Definitely among dogs. You don't have here, but in India the dogs run around in the streets, and the one who's the most powerful among them is respected by the others. Respectable dog. And even dogs, these domesticated dogs here in the West, they know if the dog is the dog of a big important man, he knows I'm a more important dog than you other dogs. Isn't it? They know I'm a big important dog. Seems like that to me in my study of dog psychology. Dogs, they have their prestige also. No, but the devotee is not it. It's just, it's foolishness. Yeah. Yeah. Come back again after 10 minutes. The devotees are not interested in this. Self-promotion. Ishwaroham. Just look at me. I'm God. Aham bhogi siddhoham balavan suki. A demoniac person thinks like this. Just look at me. I'm powerful. I'm enjoying. I'm quite competent to enjoy this material world. Everything I do well. I'm very powerful. Very happy. Materialistic people they like that other people will notice them. They like that. A well-dressed woman, like she walks into a room and she can feel the attention of the men. Oh, beautiful woman has come. Or some powerful person, a military officer comes and everyone stands up and salutes. So they like that. Yes, important person has come. But a devotee, he likes, let people see Krishna, let the attention be diverted toward Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, he traveled all over the world and he made Krishna famous, not himself famous, like so many others. Of course, so many other. When I say so many other, I mean bogus swamis. They divert the attention to themselves. But even today, Prabhupada isn't well known. But Krishna is. People have heard of Krishna. But not Prabhupada. He didn't divert attention to himself. Of course, he taught his disciples that they should worship the Guru. He taught that principle. But he always emphasized and exemplified that a guru is one who directs others toward Krishna. Not that he directs attention towards himself. His whole attention is to direct other people's attention toward Krishna. Now someone might think, well, why don't I get people interested in me and then I'll divert them to Krishna. So it's a very dangerous way to go, actually. Because it's not constitutionally the right thing to do. The right thing to do is direct the attention toward Krishna. And also, one may do that sincerely or with some good intention, but then others, they will imitate who don't have that clear intention to do so. The clear intention to divert the attention to others. And then if you want to divert attention toward yourself, then you have to promote yourself. And then who are we? It sets a bad precedent. I mean, the only qualification of a devotee is that he's centered on Krishna. So if you try to promote, someone tries to promote themselves in any other way, as being a social worker or a highly learned person or a mystic or whatever, then he's attracting people in a materialistic way. Whereas from the beginning, the directing people toward Krishna is in accord with, that is yoga, in accord with our constitutional position. And in yoga, I mean that, you know, it's our constitutional position to be linked with Krishna, understanding his transcendental qualities. And directing people toward Krishna, that is immediately, by its very nature, purifying. Whereas directing someone toward someone else because they're attracted by some material quality, that keeps people in ignorance. Or even if you try to direct people because of some spiritual quality without defining that clearly in relation to Krishna, and then you become something like some Sai Baba cult or something like that, with no actual depth or substance. So Srila Prabhupada, as the ideal guru, he was loved by his disciples, no doubt, who held him in the highest respect. But he directed that all toward Krishna. And that's why they loved him. Because he was transparent by a medium. He was transparent in that he didn't want anything for himself. He wanted everything for Krishna. And he accepted prestige only for the purpose of instructing us, directing them toward Krishna. It's a very dangerous role to take, that of a guru, because as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that anyone who becomes a guru, just by doing that, they cease to be a Vaishnava. The Vaishnava takes the position below everyone, and a guru has to take the position to instruct others. But on the other hand, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if no one takes the role of a guru, then the parampara will cease. So one has to do so as a service. But it's a very dangerous role to take. One has to be quite transparent in doing so, not desiring prestige. The ideal is has been set by Madhavendra Puri, that is described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, how when he was in Rimuna, coming on the way to Puri to get sandalwood for his deity, Gopal, as he was known at that time, then Gopinath, the deity at Rimuna, stole or hidden some kheer for that milk preparation for Madhavendra Puri to take. And the pujari in the temple, Gopinath woke up the pujari with a dream and said, "Hey, go get that kheer, give it to my devotee." So this incident of Madhavendra Puri being such a great devotee that the deity stole for him, seemed to steal from him. That reputation of Madhavendra Puri spread. Of course, in those days there was no Facebook or any such thing, but people would, spreading by word of mouth. Do you know that idiomatic usage? That just one person would tell another, and someone would tell someone else, and so Madhavendra Puri was journeying to Puri, and his reputation went ahead of him. That a great sadhu is coming. He's such a great sadhu that the deity himself is stealing him. So Madhavendra Puri, he didn't want to be in a situation where people were oohing and aahing around him. He didn't want that. But still he had the order to go to Puri to collect sandalwood, so he had to go there. He left immediately Rimuna on getting that kheer, because he thought, oh, people will all be respecting me. He didn't want that, so he left immediately. But he couldn't avoid that his reputation went ahead of him. But for his own sake, he would have gone and left that place. He didn't want to stay to be respected. But anyway, he had to go to Puri. to collect the sandalwood. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami explains that even though the devotee himself may not want to be respected, Krishna arranges anyway that he is respected. But for his own sake, he didn't want that. So that is the ideal of a devotee, that he doesn't look to be respected. But he is. A devotee is naturally respected, especially in religious cultures. In religious cultures, religious people are respected. Although that's breaking down all over the world, as more and more it's seen that religious people are not as holy as they might seem to be. But generally the culture is there to respect holy people. I think probably until recently here in Croatia, I'm not sure because it was the socialist regime, but the local priest, parish priest, did they have that during the socialist regime? Yeah. So he was a respected person? Maybe less so nowadays, is it? Still respected. I saw in Lipa when that priest came with his girlfriend and people didn't seem to respect him so much. Remember that?
Yeah. Well, that was, this is an Orthodox village.
Oh.
The villagers were Orthodox.
Oh, they were Orthodox, so he could have a girlfriend.
He's a Catholic priest from another village anyway. So.
Oh, I see. So it's an Orthodox village and... Then okay. All right. So that culture had. I recently saw some YouTubes of this Dalai Lama, and it seems that he's very highly respected among many people. He's got nothing to say. Nothing. I mean, nothing more than, Stephen Covey or some other so-called New Age guru, just something, nothing of any substance. And they can say something like, be happy, something like that. I'm just the same as you, he said, I'm nothing special. Nothing. They have no actual spiritual knowledge, but they are respected as, just they have the position, and if they can carry it off well, they can act the part, then respect it. So, religious people tend to be respected if they have their role to play in society, that people feel good about them, and if they're a holy people, then people can go to them and offer them respect and then feel good that I'm also religious and the holy man will bless me, kiss the ring of the bishop. Do they do that? Kiss the ring of the bishop and feel that now God is blessing me. And you go on with your materialistic life. And the holy man, he has his acts in a respectable manner, in a dignified manner. He plays his role, and everyone else comes and they kiss his ring and they respect him. And it's another social game that they all play, but they're nothing of any real substance. They sit down and have their meal and eat a big plate of mead just after the peace conference. And tell a few jokes, but not dirty jokes, but dignified. They're very dignified, I guess. They're just playing a game. They're also just like the people in the shopping mall with their designer shoes and their fancy watches. They're playing their game. So there's the respected holy man, he plays his game also. Nothing, no actual connection with Krishna. So, What should a devotee do? Should he? Is he dignified? Well, naturally a devotee is dignified. Naturally a devotee is respectful. An interesting thing is, I was just thinking about this the other day, that the same thing we did in the 1970s, dancing in the streets and so on. And now we're doing the same thing, but now we've got some kind of respect in society. In those days we were just considered scum. It's the only thing, just useless people. But now, Hare Krishna, all right. And if you're older, that gives some kind of prestige among a little bit, not very much. But it's kind of okay. That's all right. Like that. So a little bit respected. So, but a devotee is naturally respectable, and it's among the community of devotees, that should be there also. That's required. Otherwise, how can the senior teach the junior? That danger is always there. That position is, or naturally, people get some kind of position. As I often say about, or sometimes say about myself, I don't have to talk about myself too much, I have to make a show of not being interested in prestige. So, I'm a little big shot within ISKCON. I mean, somewhat of a big shot, not a very big shot. But it's by default, just because they've been around for so many years, and then gradually, you know, especially if you take sannyas, which that bestows some respectability upon you. So that's also required, because a sannyasi is supposed to teach others, and they cannot be teaching without respect. Of course, they have modern theories that you just let the kids play and have them have a good time. But in traditional societies, in the school, the discipline. And actually, it seems kids used to learn a lot better when they were disciplined. That they respected. The respect came from fear. So, I also saw Srila Prabhupada, actually, one time especially, I remember, when he entered the temple room in Bhaktivedanta Manor, and it was completely packed with devotees. And there was such a mood of awe of Srila Prabhupada. Devotees were struck with awe. I mean, Srila Prabhupada was just walking up to the temple, up to this long temple room. So he was walking from the back to the front, and devotees feel the mood of awe of the devotees, very feeling how great is Prabhupada. So of course that didn't come just from some position or title that Prabhupada had, but he was naturally respected for his spiritual qualities. So it's good that that's required, that senior devotees are respected, not just for position, should also be respected. We shouldn't think that position within the Krishna conscious movement is something mundane. It can be mundane if the person in the post is completely mundane. But to take a position for the sake of administering Krishna's services, that should be respected also. But spiritual leaders, they are respected for their learning, gravity, their proper behavior, their detachment from the world. These spiritual qualities are expected of people who are in the position of spiritual leaders. And if those who actually have these qualities, then they naturally become respected by others. So a devotee doesn't want to be respected, but naturally by his qualities he becomes respected. And we see, even we talk about some people that they have nothing actually spiritual or anything really substantial to offer, but still, I mean, even among non-devotee, supposedly spiritual people, or even among like heads of state or someone in a big position, there's a certain kind of respectable behavior we would expect of them. Like, you know, you wouldn't expect to see like a nun wearing designer sunglasses and walking like a fashion model with glitzy high-heeled shoes. You don't expect that. So there's a certain kind of behavior which is expected of them, by which they are respected. So devotees, they should be seen as spiritual people, and actually be spiritual people. To actually, of course, devotees, like I say, they're not interested in respect. But at the same time, they're required to be respected in the sense that for preaching Krishna consciousness, it requires that the people of the world respect them. This is a very, it's almost like a paradox. It's like a very dangerous situation. Like, you know, how far do you take it? If someone is very renounced, people tend to respect them. Like, we've heard of certain Greek monks who live very austere life, and people respect them very much. And some religious people, they live in a they live quite a high rolling lifestyle, you could say. They have they're head of some institution with lots of money. They drive these big sedan cars, they're super long cars, like they have, I think there's only very few of them are built, like for heads of state of some big country, very, very, very long cars. So like we say, I was told this prelate of the Russian Orthodox Church, he goes in one of those cars, and all the traffic has to stop for him, so that he can drive from outside Moscow to downtown Moscow in 20 minutes. All the traffic's cleared out, and the driver comes in at 180 kilometers an hour. He's a big shot, like that. So some religious people, they have some of the trappings. You know what that means? Like the paraphernalia prestigious people. Even Srila Prabhupada, he built big temples with the specific aim to catch the attention of the public. When he was asked why he was building a big temple in Vrindavan, when the previous acharyas of his sampradaya had lived under a different tree every night, which seemed to be against the principles of the sampradaya, Srila Prabhupada answered that if I was to sit under a tree, no, you wouldn't be here even talking to me. So for this, it's for your sake. Because you need this to be impressed enough to come and listen to what I have to say. Of course, Srila Prabhupada didn't say so many words, but that's the point. And he was very interested that after bringing his Western disciples to India and taking them on a tour around, I believe it was 1971, Prabhupada said, now you have to do something. Don't just travel around and You have people throw flowers on you, now you have to build some temple. It was very difficult. But Srila Prabhupada knew that by doing this, our movement would become established, that people would take it very seriously, which is a fact. So the prestigious temple, if you've seen, just like our Vrindavan temple, Mayapur temple, Bombay temple, they're very prestigious. Bombay temple especially. Well, it looks very opulent. I remember myself, I went there once, first time after many years I'd been there. I've mostly been in Bangladesh for many years. You don't see anything opulent there. Then I came to Bombay, and just seeing the chandelier in the temple, I was looking at it for some time. I hadn't seen anything like that for a long time. So it's impressive. And people then think, well, this is something very important. So it's a paradox that because a preacher of Krishna consciousness may accept some paraphernalia which will lead materialistic people to respect him. Like a fancy car, some big rings,
televisions?
I don't think so. That's not very spiritual, is it?
But expensive
television. Expensive television. Yeah, I mean, almost all the ashrams, if you go to all these Mayavadi ashrams in India, they all have, isn't it? They all have TVs. They all watch on TV. So that may be there. That we don't say that's wrong if it's used in the service of Krishna. But at the same time, if one becomes attached to that prestige for its own sake, then that's very dangerous. And then there are some people who, seeing that, will some people will say, okay, he's a very good sadhu, big man, all right, we take him seriously. But other people see and say, hey, that's not spiritual at all. So you're caught. The same profile that will attract some will repel others. And if you go around in just some ragged clothes, a few people may like that, but most people will just think you're a beggar and not take you seriously at all. So the issue of prestige or not prestige, well, it's not the main issue. Devotees should be true to Krishna. But as a preacher should also be interested in how people perceive of him. Of course, like I hear, people respect like bishops and popes and patriarchs and lamas and Dalai Lamas, not some animal. But Srila Prabhupada once said to his disciples that he once pointed out, why are these people all worshipping me? He said, because I'm free from sex desire. So that's the position or how you dress, that's not ultimately the factor, that's not the measure. How much one is actually free from material desire, actually detached from this world, that is ultimately to be respected in a sadhu. And even today in India, people don't like this, if a so-called sadhu is mixing up with women. Just like I asked you about that parish, or that priest who came with his girlfriend. I asked Murari Kutta, don't the local people mind them? He said, he's a human being. They didn't mind very much. But even now in India, like this Paramahamsa Nityananda, so-called, his whole prestige was smashed because he got caught at last. He'd been doing it, wasn't the first time, but he was caught on video kissing some movie star. So his whole prestige was smashed. People, they don't like if a sadhu is living like a lusty person. Within our ISKCON also, that's not liked. Sannyasi is respected, but then it's found out that he's having lusty affairs. No one likes that. So Srila Prabhupada, he said that I am respected. Why do they respect me? Why are they worshipping me? Of course, one may worship the Guru as a formality. But Prabhupada said, because I am free from sex desire. It's not an easy position to come to live free from sex desire. Goswami. Goswami means one who controls the senses. So, devotees by their natural behavior are dignified. They are not foolish enjoyers of this material world. They're detached from this world. They can walk through a shopping mall. Generally, they wouldn't go there anyway. But I was speaking about shopping mall, because the shopping malls, their shopping center is everywhere. But the malls, it seems they're especially for attracting people with extra money, to spend their money on useless things, which show that they have extra money to spend on useless things. As a matter of prestige, just for that. Or to hang out at some ice cream parlor where the ice cream costs 20% more than it does elsewhere, just so that you can have the prestige of being in that expensive place. Right, there are so many clubs you can go where the drinks cost sometimes two times, three times more. But people like to go there just to show. We're spending extra money. We have extra money to spend. Yeah. High class drunkards. Can be any such thing. Yeah. So, yeah, devotees, actually we want that devotees should be respected in human society. Outside of India, mostly people don't even hardly know about our movement, unfortunately. It's not like a highly respected movement. So, devotees should be respected by the public. First of all, the public should know about us. Actually, our movement was respected in the 1970s. Maybe it was feared somewhat, but it came to be respected that Srila Prabhupada would sometimes quote that one American congressman had openly said that unless this Hare Krishna movement is checked, within 10 years it may take over the government. So that was some kind of respect, just like nowadays throughout the world, Islam has got a lot of respect, maybe out of fear, but that's one kind of respect. So that's the lowest level of respect, that fear that that's one kind of respect. So even to be disrespected is better than being ignored or being unknown. That's why some people, I suppose, act in a deliberately uncouth manner, or they deliberately act in a manner which is most unrespectable, just to attract others' attention. They'll deliberately dress in very bad clothes, or deliberately be anti-social. I guess these punk groups and something like that, just to show that we reject your respect about of your society. So they just wanted to be known. They wanted to stand out as being unrespected. We don't want to be respected by your measure. So devotees, they're not interested intrinsically in being respected or disrespected, but they do want to please Krishna. They want that Krishna should be respected. So devotees should be prominent in society, by being active. People should know what is our movement and should be respected for their act. The best platform of respect for devotees is not because they have big temples. That's also good. I'm not saying it's bad. Having big temples is good to develop big religious edifices. But if devotees are actually known as saintly people, of course, people don't know what saintliness is. But some idea. Devotees are known as not being ordinary people, greedy people, or interested in grossly mundane activities. Respected like that. At the same time, again, you see, it's like a paradox. There's always two sides of it. Devotees should not be so much concerned about being respected that they conform or they make as their priority being respected by people who, after all, are living like cats and dogs. We shouldn't be so much concerned that we shouldn't sell our souls to people who themselves are living like animals. They have no idea of actual human behavior. Devotees, our behavior, in many ways it might seem quite disrespectful. What is it? Not to be respected. What's the word? Disrespectful. Yeah. Disrespectful. It's disrespectful or disrespectful. So, just like many parents would not be happy to see their children, and maybe not in Croatia, people are more easygoing here. But many parents, they wouldn't be happy to see their children dancing around in public, wearing some strange clothes, dressed in a strange style. Is it like that here? Many parents, they wouldn't like that. It's like they'd consider it a great embarrassment among their own friends that my child is doing that. But that doesn't mean that devotees are going to stop doing it. Srila Prabhupada said that our method of getting public acceptance is we change the public. Instead of changing ourselves to be respectable according to their standards, we change their understanding to our standards. That's a big proposition, but the point is we don't want to sell our souls or become so much concerned with what the public think about us that we stop our core activities. Although actually in India once Prabhupada he did stop the devotees from going out on Harinam. Can you imagine that? They were going out on Harinam saying that Prabhupada said stop doing this. Because people thought they were beggars. Because in India it's quite common that people they go around and they sing some religious songs and then they beg money. So Srila Prabhupada didn't want that. So he started the life membership program, going to mostly businessmen, and they should give a donation at that time, 1,111 rupees, and they should get Prabhupada's books. And so Prabhupada wanted to present them. You see, we have these books, we have these spiritual books, and then people give donations, and with the donations, temples are built. So Srila Prabhupada wanted that our devotees be seen as respectable people. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he also said that he didn't want Vaishnavas or Vaishnavism to be seen as choto lokya dharma, or the religion for little people. He said that if non-devotees, we should always be a little bit ahead of them. We should be more intelligent, more knowledgeable. You know, we should be ahead of them. So, for Krishna's sake, a devotee is knowledgeable, expert, but always the focus for Krishna's sake. And ultimately, we don't care so much what the public thinks. On one sense we do, on the other sense we don't. One sense we do, we want them to respect devotees so they'll listen to what we have to say, which is important. They should listen to what devotees have to say. But on the other hand, we cannot compromise our core principles to satisfy them. Just like previously, especially in India, many people used to say, why don't you do welfare activities? Why don't you open schools and hospitals and feed the poor? And then we would explain, well, actually, our focus is on preaching the message of Bhagavad Gita, giving the all-round solution. Then some devotees had the idea, well, why don't we open hospitals and schools and feed the poor, and then people will like it. And now they're doing it, and people like it. So people respect us, but for the wrong reason. Because they think we're helping the body, we're helping uplift society. But they don't understand that the real way to uplift society is by not by dealing with the material needs, but by dealing with the spiritual needs. So we gained respect, but of course, some people get very angry if they heard me saying this. But we lost our focus. So that even people joining our movement, they think that one of our main purposes is to build hospitals and schools and schools teaching government syllabus, build the nation, because that's what we advertise. So we gained respect, but we lost our prestige. So there's a few thoughts about prestige. If you really don't want to be prestigious and just want to and just concentrate on Krishna, then you could try being like Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj or Gorky Shah Das Babaji Maharaj, who really completely absorbed in bhajan, and they were completely aloof from the world. Completely aloof. Gorky Shah Das Babaji, he was so fed up of materialistic people coming to him for getting blessings, but they weren't serious about spiritual life. He went to live in a latrine, which here in this country you can't understand because of the cultural difference. You can't understand people living in the latrine. Well, it might sound like, well, it's not a bad idea if the rent's cheap. Why not? But but that's considered so unrespectable. For that, so no one would come to see him. So he was happy. Now they can. Now all these people stop coming to me, and I can just go on with my Krishna consciousness. But then his own guru, his own disciple, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was living pretty like Gorky Shah Das Babaji Maharaj. He came to Calcutta and started preaching. Eventually there was a big temple, prestigious temple, prestigious organization. So it might seem that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had come down from the level and betrayed his guru. But he was able to do that and not be affected by it, because he always kept the ideal of Gorky Shah. That's actual yukta vairagya. And one is anasaktasya vishayanya taham upayanjataha nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagya muchate. When one has no interest in anything of this world, but wants to engage everything in this world in Krishna's service. So keeping that ideal of Gorky Shah always with him, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur lived amid opulence, like a respectable person of this world. But then he complained that some of his disciples, they were interested in the building and the position. And so it's very dangerous. A religious institution is it's a necessary evil. for preaching Krishna consciousness, some kind of organization is needed. But as soon as there's organization, then there's money, buildings, properties, positions. These things are very dangerous. So we should always discuss at the level of pure devotional service, as Srila Prabhupada did. You may say, well, we're not on that level, let's just bring it down a bit. But if we bring the standard down a bit, whatever level we speak on, people will come up maybe at the best 50% of that level. So if you see, well, actually people are, they're not on this high level, so let's not talk about pure devotional service, let's talk about something that people can manage or adapt to. Let's talk about 50%. Then they'll come down to 25%. And then you say, okay, let's talk at 25% level, and then they'll come down to 12.5%, and then there'll be nothing left. So Srila Prabhupada always kept the ideal. This is our aim, pure devotional service. Let us stick to that ideal. And even if everyone else is coming down, let us stick to that ideal. Because there's nothing else worth attaining. Toma pratishta shukare bhishta. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He spoke of mundane prestige as being as attractive as a pig stool. Can you imagine anything less attractive than pigs do? So he found it so distasteful. So within a religious organization, including, believe it or not, this one, which we are members of, it's likely, inevitable, that some or many are going to be more interested in the prestige, opulence, and this and that. Actually, it's good to, in some ways to come to places where our movement's not doing that well, and then you can see who's actually sincere to serve. It used to be in ISKCON, when everything was going well, people wanted to be temple presidents. But nowadays, you know, there's no place. Mostly just a bunch of headaches, and the prestige associated with it is gone. So now you'll see who actually wants to serve. Nowadays, no one wants to be a temple president, even if you pay them. So, some thoughts. Don't be interested in pig stool. That would seem, seems like we shouldn't have to preach that. Eh? We may preach, don't be interested in this material world. We don't have to preach, don't be interested in pig stool. We don't have to say to people not to get some pig stool and smear it all over their body. We don't have to tell people that. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that this desire for prestige and position is just like that. So despicable. Say I'm sitting on a big seat. Sitting on a seat of love you all. Paradoxical, isn't it? Yeah, any questions, please? How to achieve the freedom from sexual desire that Bhaktivedanta Swami had. You don't like to follow Srila Prabhupada? You have some objection to that? Yeah. I don't like it when people don't like Prabhupada, especially in his own house. Why not call him Srila Prabhupada? There's so many Swamis. How to achieve that? By the process that he taught us. Not easy. That's for sure. It's not easy. Even Brahma and Shiva they appear to be victimized by that. Of course, we don't think they are victimized by that, but just to show us how difficult it is to be free from sexual desires. They appear to be afflicted by it. Ultimately, we have to get the mercy of Krishna. When we're attracted by Krishna, then we won't be attracted by Maya. Yadavadhi mamacheta Krishna padar vinde nava nava rasa dhaman yudanta rantama sit. Tadavadhi bhakta nari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukha vikara sushtu nishthivanamcha. Srila Prabhupada often used to quote this, saying that since I have been engaged in the service of Krishna, or since my mind has been absorbed in the lotus feet of Krishna and relishing ever new rasa in relationship with Krishna, since that time, whenever I think of sexual contact with a woman, my lips curl with distaste and I spit. So that's the verse. Application, well, that we have to work on.
Can I ask another question?
Yep.
This is connected to the previous one.
By the way, I guess I should make a little comment here. That doesn't mean that we reject women. It's our own perceptions that are wrong, not that the jivas inhabiting a woman's body are wrong or there's something despicable about them. Yeah. Yeah, then?
I have been abused by a pedophile in childhood. This lecture was called that you're abused by a homosexual. How can I transcend the hurt from that abuse?
How can you transcend the hurt of child abuse in your childhood? Difficult? But we can transcend, or we can overcome all the difficulties that we have had in this life and previous lives by understanding our constitutional relationship with Krishna. We've been through so much hurt and through so much suffering in so many lives. This world is horrible, but we are part and parcel of Krishna. We don't belong to this world. Actually, suffering, if we take it in the right spirit, can be the platform for our spiritual, it can be the platform for coming to the position beyond all suffering. When we see that this world is a place of suffering, that I've suffered in this way, I could have suffered much more, and many others have suffered much more, and this whole world is a place of suffering, we don't want to suffer, let us come to that platform beyond all suffering. That can be the impetus for us to be serious about spiritual life. As long as we're thinking, let me try to make some adjustment in this world so that I can be happy, we're never going to be happy. Especially in the modern age, it's very difficult to trust anyone. So even if you get, you make all arrangements to be happy, someone can cheat you. Or someone can attack you and take away all that you have. Or for no reason, you can be attacked. I was attacked in my childhood also, for no reason. Some people just kind of hit me over the head with an, I guess it was an iron bar. I didn't stop to analyze the what, iron or steel bar or something. You know, just for fun, I guess. So, well, that changed my life. My long hair, which I was so much attached to, had to go off because it was all full of blood and all messed up. So, but that changed my identity. Then I didn't want to identify with that long hair scene anymore. Those who, despite all suffering, they have faith that ultimately reality is good. They see all difficult situations as a lesson. What do I have to learn here? I need this difficult lesson. Let me learn from this. One thing I learn from hearing about such things is that I myself personally have to be very, very careful what I do, especially in my position, because I can really let people down. Nowadays, there have been so many letdowns that one more doesn't seem to make that much difference. It does make a difference. It does make it. I mean, people have faith in me as a representative of Srila Prabhupada, so I have to be very careful not to betray that trust. So, one thing you can learn from that is to yourself deal with people in a way that you don't hurt them. That's at a basic social level. And seeing that, considering that you yourself have suffered so much, and others right now at this moment are suffering all over the world. So many people are suffering in similar ways. See what you can do to help others be delivered from that suffering. And actually that is possible by Krishna consciousness. So the best way you can get free from that suffering is to take to Krishna consciousness and help others to come to this higher platform of consciousness, wherein if one comes to this higher platform of consciousness, then he will not exploit others for the sake of one's own gross supposed pleasure. That's my suggestion. Come to a higher platform of consciousness. Don't remain stuck forever in that. That won't help you. Go beyond it. Yeah, anything else?
Can you tell us a little bit more? Devotees don't want respect for themselves, but they respect to all other living beings.
The devotee doesn't want respect for himself, but gives respect to all other living beings. Can I tell you more about that? It sounds so difficult. Well, that's the attitude of a devotee. Devotee thinks I'm very small and insignificant, but respects all others as part and parcel of Krishna. That comes from intense Krishna consciousness, by actually seeing everything and everyone in relation to Krishna. So when we see the relationship of Krishna, that everyone has a relationship with Krishna, then one respects them on that platform. For preaching, one may have to be straightforward in saying that they're living like cats and dogs. That is required. But inherently a devotee respects everyone. Anything else?
Please tell me, I would like to ask a question about Vaishnava Aparad.
A question about Vaishnava Aparad.
Yes.
My usual response, whatever the question would be, is just don't do it. Then there's no need to ask questions about it. Of course, I'm quite expert at doing it, best thing is don't do it. So what's your question?
What if not intending, intentionally, somebody...
unintentionally one performs Vaishnava pranayama. That may happen.
And then that happens, and we cannot make progress in the spiritual.
Then you cannot make progress.
He becomes aware, he forgets the situation. And what then?
Unintentionally, if one performs a. He's not intelligent enough to realize that he did an aparad. Well, if one is serious about advancing in Krishna consciousness, then one should realize if one's done something wrong, that Krishna gives the intelligence. And one should try to rectify that. So if one is not even aware that he's doing something wrong, that indicates a lack of sincerity, doesn't it? Lack of sincerity, what can you do with such people? At least sincerity means at least we should try seriously to serve Krishna. Yeah, some question?
Is woman in Krishna consciousness equal like a man?
Are women in Krishna consciousness equal like men? Hot question. What's the politically correct answer? I'm not interested in the politically correct answer. All living beings are equal in Krishna's service. It doesn't depend on gender. Many of the great devotees have been in women's bodies. In traditional Vedic culture, women have a subordinate social role to that of men. I think in ISKCON today, still it's like that to some extent. There's a reason for that. That's called misogyny in modern language, hatred of women.
Yes.
The idea that
okay.
Women that are discriminated against. Discrimination is there, but discrimination doesn't necessarily mean discrimination against. It means to recognize the difference and understand each person's role in which they can best, for their own interests and for that of others. And to organize society in that way. If you're interested in understanding this in depth, I gave a seminar almost 2 years ago, which is available on the internet. It's about 4 or 5 hours long. It's called Women, Masters or Mothers. You can find it on the internet. I think you know how to, you set up all. You can. This is Hanuman Dasa, he can direct you to her. I thought within a few days of that being put on the internet, there were 600 downloads. And I thought, now I'm going to get all the tomatoes and eggs thrown at me. But actually I didn't. And even I got responses from people who they stated that they understood the principle and now their way of thinking had changed. So it's a modern idea that women and men should be equal in all respects. But I don't think, I mean, look at yourself and see, is modern society the paragon? Is modern society really better than previously? I mean, we seem to have more and more problems, social problems in the modern age, right? I mean, at least women previously, they had one fixed up husband for their whole life, just for instance. And you might think, well, better not to have, but so many women, they lead a free life and they spend, when they're no longer attractive, they have no children and they just grow old and rot away and no one cares for them. Anyway, please listen to that. The modern idea is that women should beat men to make up for all the excesses of thousands of years. The men should be stomped into the ground.
Modern woman.
Yeah. Recently I was flying from London to somewhere, Delhi, somewhere, Bombay. wherever, somewhere in India. And there was a British newspaper, and I was just flipping through it. And there was a report on the Glastonbury Festival. I think maybe you heard of that. It's a famous festival for music and this and that. And I just saw some photo, and it was, I thought it was horrible. I guess people might have liked that. I just saw the photo briefly and I closed it, and then, but it's still in my mind. It was an all-women's rock group or something, like rock or jazz or something like that. And like their hair was, it was them performing live, and it was like their hair was all over the place, and they looked really aggressive like that. I thought, why do women want to be like that? It's so horrible. I don't know why they call it feminism, they should call it masculinism, actually. Because the women are just trying to be like macho men. What do you want to be like that? I mean, why do even men want to be like that?
Because of revenge.
Huh?
Because of revenge.
There's a revenge, but that's not... I mean, if women want to show themselves better, then be better. Don't try to be worse in the same way. If you think that men are bad, then show a better example. Anyway, you please listen to that. My basic point is that the woman's body is designed by nature for having children. Remember? And it's natural for women to have children. They're happy like that. And then they have to look after the children. The children are very important. The main sufferers of the women's liberation are the children. Because the women don't have time for them, and it's stupid to be a housewife. That's the worst thing that happened for children, which means for the whole of society. I mean, there are reasons that each generation is just more and more wild and crazy. One reason is that children, if they survive not getting aborted, that they don't have a stable family, and their mothers don't have time to, and they're not interested in looking after them. So that's the important job that women have to do. Anyway, please listen to that if you're interested. Thank you for not throwing eggs or tomatoes. Because really, I mean, it's so fanatical that, I mean, if you even try to suggest that men and women should have different social roles, the woman's role, yes, it's socially supported, subtle role. That's feminine. That, you're immediately shouted down as being a misogynist, and, you know, people don't even want to listen.
Sexist,
yeah. Don't want to listen. It's like, you know, you're like a Hitler kind of figure or something. Really? Really? There are reasons why. It's not, of course, exploitation is there. That's the material world. It's always going to be exploitation. There's no perfect social system. Any social system is an attempt to control or manage, which also includes stratification. Stratification means putting people in different social classes. There's no non-hierarchical system. There's always some people are higher and others are lower. An attempt to manage people who are imperfect. And whatever system you have, you'll find that some people will get around it and exploit others. Just like in the United Kingdom, Britain, the mother of all democracies, they're finding out that it's just the higher strata is just completely corruption ridden. People are shocked. Why should they be shocked? They're just finding out a little bit. And if they dig deeper, they'll find more and more. How far will they dig? We'll see. In India, they're also finding out huge. I mean, everyone knows corruption, but it's gone to huge levels. So the idea of democracy, and you have systems, government, local government, and the legislature, free press, and still totally corrupt system. The press, the educational institutes, they're all bought up by people with big money. So it's by mind control now. And feminism is another. It's another myth invented to exploit people. Women are not better off nowadays than they were previously. They have the freedom to degrade themselves. That's what value is such a freedom? Better to have discipline, control society. With this idea of giving freedom to everyone, now I'm off. Anyway, I gave another lecture on this topic in Berlin a few years ago. You can look at it. About freedom. But this idea of giving freedom, that's also failed, because you see that given freedom, people, what do? They stick their bodies full of drugs. They don't maintain steady relationships. They have one divorce after another. And what's the value of freedom? Better to have laws which control people for their own good. Just like children, they're supposed to be controlled. Because it's understood. They're not intelligent. Their intelligence is not developed enough to act in a manner that is suitable for their well-being. But the adults also need it. You can see that. With given so much freedom, people are just becoming more and more and more degraded. So better have a control set. And then people become afraid. Oh, and then we're going to get like Hitler and this. So therefore, the enlightened consciousness is required. Otherwise, any system is useless. A woman who's under the control of her husband, who's Krishna conscious, is a far better position than one who is free and wild to do whatever she likes. Much better position. The husband can guide her for her own good.
If he's good,
yeah. But even if he's not, the woman should endeavor to be good. This idea, well, men aren't good, so I'll be bad. And then where's the hope for anyone? Then everyone's bad. Anyway, it's a big topic. There's much to be said on this. But one basic principle especially of Vedic society, is the understanding that indiscriminate mixing between, actually not just Vedic society, it was everywhere until recently, indiscriminate mixing of men and women causes social disaster. Then there'll be illicit sex. Sex is not forbidden, but it should be within the institution of marriage. And the natural is people like to be natural these days, so the natural result of having sex is having children. So it is understood that indiscriminate, just men and women all mix up. No. Some control, because too much mixing with men and women means that proper discrimination is lost, and then it's a social disaster, and people suffer so much. The modern society is promoting so much sex, 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 and people are suffering. So that should be controlled. Overrated. Sex is the most overrated phenomenon in the world. Always has been, but especially in the modern age. Okay, I'll finish that. Hare Krishna.